So I started to make my own oils for personal use and start to use the whole plant to extract all the qualities of the plant, you know, with the CBDs, the cannabinoids, and even the seeds, to make foods with them, to bake bread. And we started also to make that wonderful hemp fiber mission. So we made a gathering with about 10 or 15 people. We were all women at the time. And started to research about the history of the hemp fiber extraction, which actually is done all over the world in small tribes in Laos and Vietnam. They do it in the mountains in India. They do it in Japan.
Bom dia y buenos dias. Welcome to Eco Village Library Podcast. Here we talk about all things about the good life, good living, and good learning, and all that good stuff. But let's cut to the chase. This episode I'm really thrilled about. I had a very interesting conversation with Lily, based out of Portugal, who's been pioneering an interesting project in regards to traditional hemp living. You know, if you're familiar with hemp in the slightest, you might have seen maybe the machinery kind of harvesting the big hemp stalks, or some like mostly like conventional agricultural means of harvesting or growing and harvesting hemp, you know, at least here in the United States or in other countries of the world. But Lily in Portugal has taken a whole different other approach. And it's an approach that I myself personally would love to live out one day. And I learned a lot from her on just harvesting hemp with your hands, with your full intention, with your spirit, and in community. Just imagine you're on like a hot afternoon, let's say on September, and you're just breaking up those stalks one after another, and you kind of lose yourself in the flow, I guess you would say. But while you're talking with others, or, you know, I've had this experience many times when I worked on a lot of organic farms. Like, for example, when I was on an organic coffee farm in Brazil, and just being out there with the workers in the field, and you just pick beans all day. It's just the same movement, but you lose yourself in conversation, being in peace. And this is kind of the same thing, but with hemp. And it's very traditional because you see countless of anecdotes from history throughout all cultures, from Hungary, like hundreds of years ago, or in Italy, or in Portugal, you know, all these countries where that's how the people lived. This is the basis of the people's lifestyle. So it's very interesting to see this perspective rise once again from the past, lived out in the present. And this is why I really love talking with Lily and her project. So without further ado, also real quick, before we begin, if you would like to support the podcast, please follow the Patreon link posted in the description below on whatever platform you're listening to. And it will come with some perks, and you'll see it there in the description on the link. So check it out. Okay, so welcome. Could you tell us your name and a little bit of your background?
Yes, I'm Lily. Lillian. I come from Germany. I was born there, but right now I'm living in Portugal, which is my father's homeland. And it turned into my own homeland in 2012 when I became mother for my first daughter. And because I felt the calling to find out about my roots, and my travels brought me to Portugal, and since then I'm living there very happily. And since 2017, started the dream of something bigger in me, like a little seed I felt it was sprouting. By then I had my second son. He's now 3 years old.
Nice. And then from that point, what brought you to get involved with hemp?
Yeah, that was really wonderful. Actually, I was searching for a kind of a bigger meaning in life. So I left the capital, Lisbon, and went to the countryside. That was when my second son was born, because I felt there was like the city was getting very disconnected me a lot from my own purpose. So I started to realize that the plants are actually going to be taking me closer to what I'm supposed to be doing on this earth. So actually it just happened to come across my path. And I've heard a lot about hemp, and I had a friend from Bulgaria that started planting. That was by 2016. And she motivated me. It was a sisterhood thing. It was a woman that said, look, that's the thing of the future. And she was kind of my inspiration, and she's a very strong, powerful woman. So I really caught onto it, and we went to visit some farms in Portugal that already existed, because there is actually no hemp in Portugal for a really long time. Because before, during many, many hundreds of years, Portugal has been a very big producer of hemp because of rope for the navy, and the sails have all been made out of hemp. And Portugal is a very big textile producer still now. But at the time, hemp was one of the main materials.
And tell me, how did your project come to fruition?
It all was very magical. So I kind of met the right people that all were motivated as me. And we just started out the project, which is called Sete Irmãs, which means Seven Sisters. So the Seven Sisters is an astronomical constellation in the sky. It's a cluster of stars that is actually a very famous cluster that in all cultures all over the world has a certain meaning to the people. For example, the Mayans, for example, the Chichen Itza is directed with the opening towards the Seven Sisters. And they appear at certain moments in the sky of the year, which are directing people throughout the cycle of the year. Basically, the agricultural processes in traditional cultures have been always guided by the stars. But one of them is definitely the Seven Sisters. So the Greek have their own archetypes based on the Seven Sisters stories. And also, even in India and all over the world, actually, there's a story about the Seven Sisters. And I just found out recently that the Portuguese, they have also a story about them, the Sete Irmãs. There were seven sisters, and they would all go onto their own castle on one hill, and then they started to communicate over the hills to each other. That was the story of the seven sisters. And one of them would be naughty and go out at night to visit the others, although they agreed that they would all stay separated on their own hill. So in Portugal, we have a strong saints tradition. So each one of them is like a saint, basically. So there's Nossa Senhora, Our Lady from Penha, which is one of the mountains that I actually live on. And it's so funny. Nice. It's like next door to me. So I'm getting every day deeper into the origin of my own intention. It's a very spiritual project, actually. It's all led by guidance of the moment. So every time something evolves, it's because something just appears naturally on the way. So we just started out basically planting hemp, because that was the most logical of all that and the most practical. And we had that guidance. We said, okay, the seven sisters are guiding us. We're going to plant this plant. And so we were basically kind of in service of that. It sounds a little bit like superstitious, but it was really like that. Because the plant has a very spiritual connotation. No? Like cannabis as such has the Santa Maria, which is another saint connected to this plant, which is a female archetype. So the seven sisters have a lot to do with that female energy that women create in sisterhood. So that's the origin of the story. So we were actually three people in the beginning, and we just started to plant. We were very practical. We ordered the seeds, because you have to order them from a certified seed producer. The seeds have to have less than 0.1% THC.
Where were they located?
They are located in France, which is the biggest producer of seeds, because France hasn't had any restriction on hemp ever. All of the countries have been banned, like since 1970. I don't know. Like America was in 1937 that hemp was prohibited, but in Europe it was later, and France basically never had any prohibition. So they always continue to plant hemp for fibers, and that's why they're biggest seed producers, and they're the second biggest producer of hemp in the world after China.
Smart people.
Because China also has never been prohibited, because China has their own policies. No, that's the US-China story.
Right.
So that's why China was never had that development of the prohibition. You know why hemp was prohibited in the US?
Oh, yeah. It's some would say it's a conspiracy against like the paper industry, you know, knowing that with all industries, in fact, you know, with William Hearst and all these big interests wanting to get it out of the marketplace because they had their own interests in in trees, using trees for paper or, I don't know that. Yeah, yes. I know the story, you know, that's, and one could argue.
You're totally right. Thank you for taking off that explanation from me.
Yeah,
you're
no
totally
problem.
Right about it. And I can just continue saying that that it was not a conspirational. I think it was not a conspiration. It was basically just a simple act of getting the how do you call that, like the main market, no? So there was just a fight, basically a market fight, no? That there was a big logger, a company that wanted to produce paper out of trees. And that was it. So it was the newspapers companies that changed from producing newspaper on hand paper and started producing it with tree pulp, which was a very sad moment because hemp actually produces the amount of paper in that four times the amount of paper that 1 acre of hemp can trees can produce. Right. So it's four times more efficient, and it grows in 3 months, not in 7 years, or for example. Yeah. And there we get Portugal, and that's the interesting point. So we live in a country that has always been kind of the edge of Europe. So socio-political, it's complicated, I would say. But we are basically a producer of raw material. So we produce a lot of eucalyptus trees for paper, which produce cork. We produce olive oil and then a lot of fish, no? But this is not an exported product, not so exported product. Then there's some fruits that are starting to be exported into the European market, but we're not a big exporter on a global level.
Mm-hmm.
But just to explain a little bit why hemp could save us, by the way, because, well, now we have been a producer of these raw materials, and I'm kind of in the initiative right now, infiltrate the hemp into the local market. And that's how it developed. No? So the idea was, oh, we just want to plant hemp. That was like our spontaneous super idea, and we did it, and we mounted the business. But then at some point we started to understand what is really the problem of why hemp doesn't exist in Portugal, or why hemp doesn't exist in other places, because it really has been banned, and there's a big stigma around it, and people are still so attached to the idea that hemp and cannabis is a drug. Or so we're working a lot now on an educational level to kind of get this part out of the people's heads, and also just teaching them that it's possible to make things by our own hands and not giving the hands into other people, saying making small productions of foods. No, so.
And Lily, could you tell me a little bit about your planting strategy?
Basically, the idea is hemp doesn't go directly into permaculture, because you do have to have a certain quantity of hemp on a land to be able to profit from all the parts, because you don't want to just make a kilo of seeds. You want to make a little bit more because you need tools to transform the product. But it doesn't mean that you have to have tons of acres and big monocultures. Right now we're working on that. So our approach in the beginning also was to plant 10 hectares, which I don't know in acres, but it's quite a lot. So we bought about 400 kilos of seeds. And then we realized that there's no infrastructure, there's no sowing machines for seeds, there's no harvesting machines, and so on. So we adapted, of course, some machines, because we are very creative people over here. And we even created our own sowing machine. But to create a proper industry, there's a big, big investment to be done. So we scaled down a little bit. And then there was also some legal issues happening last year. So now the projects flipped a little bit, and we're going more from the bottom-up approach instead of investing and thinking that this is all going to be very quick. We decided to make a small intervention and just plant with local agricultures, very small pieces of land. And we're creating a connection of producers, farmers, so that we can all do the work together. And since this shift, things have just magically been happening. I mean, that has been always the idea in the beginning, but it doesn't work from the first moment on, because people are not in that mindset yet. They still think they have to do everything by themselves.
Exactly. Once you guys started, how has people received it over time? How has that evolution taken place?
Yeah, it has been very impressive, actually. So people in the beginning, they were very interested, of course, and they were actually all like clapping hands on our project, no? But it was all very distant, like, okay, they're going to produce that and they're going to export that. They didn't personally involved with the thing. But then when I started to realize myself that I'm not going to able to like succeed in the plan that I had in the beginning, I started to transform the plan by myself. No, so I started to make my own oils for personal use and use the whole plant to extract all the qualities of the plant, no, with the CBDs, the cannabinoids, and even the seeds. to make foods with them, to bake bread. And we started also to make that wonderful hemp fiber mission. So we made a gathering with about 10 or 15 people. We were all women at the time. And started to research about the history of the hemp fiber extraction, which actually is done all over the world in small tribes in Laos and Vietnam. They do it in the mountains in India. They do it in Japan, actually on a very incredible, refined level, typically Japanese. Wow. And even in the States, they do that in certain spots. But it's not something that has been very observed, because all the textile industry has been very, very, very disconnected with the plant, with the act of transforming it, because it all has been industrialized since a long time. So at that moment that I started to get in touch with the root of the plant, no, to cut it down and to macerate it, to put it into water and get the fiber off and start to brush it and do this whole heavy, like, physical work, that's where I really felt that I started to get involved with the plant. And that's actually the moment that my healing started. So because myself, I was really in a postpartum depression, like, clinically, and I used the CBD, and it did help me at the time. But when I realized that when I started to work with the plant and take from it everything it has, like the seeds, and eating it, which has incredible properties and proteins, what the body needs, and the CBD extracted in the method that I can intake and take the best benefit of it, and then use the fibers for my own making. So using my hands to transform this part of the plant to a useful object, like I'm making sponges, or I make, like, natural sponges.
So what's it like to process the hemp fibers by hand?
So when we started to work the fibers by hand, I started to get involved with the whole transformation process. And that's what connected me to my own power, where I realized that I can basically do everything out of this plant, what I want. So that's what they claim hemp is for, everything. So I started to make everything out of hemp. And that was the moment of the empowering. And when I felt that my own healing was happening, I was really getting out of depression. I saw results, like small results. You know, you work the fiber, you comb it, you brush it, you wash it, you use a spindle, a handmade spindle, and we make string. And I started to make little objects out of it. So that was the moment of magic, you know? So out of my hands, it happened that this little seed, which is less than half a centimeter, like 5 millimeters small, it started like 2 years ago. No, this made a plant, and the plant turned into medicine. It turned into food, and it turned into this little object. And that was the magic. There was, like, nobody did that. I did it. Right. You know, it was my own body. It was my own power. And then I realized how many people actually need this. And I realized what is actually the missing part in our society, you know, that we're all giving this power that we have in our hands to other people. And it's not that we ask people for doing things for us. It's about that we put the creation of objects into the hand of a company, and we have everything by hand just with money. And that's the point of the alienation of the value of the things, because we stopped knowing, we stopped valuing, and we stopped really feeling the material as such. It's just an object. And so that was a really big shift in my whole consciousness, in my whole project, actually, where I realized, look, I really wanted that project to be like that from the beginning on, but I had to first make that step in my brain that we are all in the power of creation, that we have that power of creation.
So what does your support network, your community, look like?
There appeared a lots of wonderful people around, and all those women that have been in this circle of the hemp fiber transformation. We have gathered and we have inspired each other to that community work. So it started also to become a project where women empower each other, and where we create projects together. So we made products, we make a little bag to put the oils inside, and we started to make, we have a great, a really wonderful idea of 2020, what we want to make out of the string. We're going to have the second meeting, the hemp fiber lab of 2020.
Oh, nice.
And we're going to work the stalks on that meeting and make all the whole presses from the beginning until the end to make a string, to make a product.
So now at harvest time, you all got the stalks in your hand, ready to go, ready to process. Now, what next? What's your approach from there?
My approach right now is more a practical approach. So we're going to share how to transform the plants. And at the same time, I'm going to tell you everything that I'm telling you now. So people are going to basically be personally involved with the plant. It's going to just give you the message, because if you touch that thing, it's a stalk, and you turn it into an object. It's your body who learns that message, you know? So now I feel that the project is becoming a female project, because women, what we do, I think, in comparison to men, we have a lot of this intuition, and we can just grasp things by doing it, or, you know, physically involving ourselves with things. So it's like an inner alchemy, you know? You just do it and you know it. And I think men can do the same. It's more natural for a woman's quality if you look at traditional, like, yin-yang theory, you know? Yeah. It's more embodiment, and the man is more the mind. So it's not that women don't have that capacity. We have all both in us, but it's a female approach. So that's where it's going right now. And I do have a lot of men interested in it, but it's the fact also of being able to doing that in a farm. It's a beautiful spot. It's called Quinta dos Sete Nomes. It's the Quinta of the Seven Names. And actually, we have a beautiful permaculture project that started in, I think, 10 years ago. And okay. It's one of the famous eco campings of Sintra, the place where I'm situated.
Okay.
Which is a very magical and mystical place with a very humid microclimate, which doesn't exist in Portugal, because we have a very desertified climate, which is very dry in the summer, in the winter as well.
and that's because you guys are right on the coast, right?
Yeah, it's no. So we have, let's say like that, we have lots of different climates in Portugal, but our climate is a microclimate. So there's the Sintra Mountains.
Mm-hmm.
It was the intervention of the humans that enhanced that humid climate. And I think this is incredible, if you can see that we can destruct nature, or we can destruct natural ecosystems, we can rebuild them, or we can even alter them into something completely different. It's a mystical forest of moss growing all over the place. And there's no place in Portugal where you can see moss. Like, I mean, there's a lot of moss, but like on the trees. It's very magical. It seems almost like a coral landscape on Earth, because it seems to be, it seems as if it was underwater, basically. Like, it's a tropical forest. It's not tropical because it's not hot, but it has this kind of energy.
Yeah.
So that's the story of the place where we started out. And so in this kind of magic, there's only the way to create magic. So the magic is happening. And wonderful artist has joined the project. So now we're going more into the direction of working with women, with artists, and teaching the people the cultivation through practical tools. Because hemp actually is not a plant that is very difficult to plant. You have to have a certain knowledge and have a certain understanding of the soil, of agriculture. It's not an incredibly complicated crop.
Right.
We want to incentivate a big, 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 big hemp production in Portugal, and through this local approach, so reproducing little farms or motivate people to really plant, and then gather all the plants together to be able to transform it into something bigger. It's like a cooperative approach, no? Cooperativa, we say cooperation.
Would you say that's your ultimate vision for your project?
That it's not the ultimate vision, but it's like the one of the steps we have to make to become a bigger hemp producer in Portugal. My ultimate vision still goes much further, which I feel is, if I would describe it visually, I can see it like a little rhizoma. You know what is a rhizome?
Yes. And for listeners unfamiliar with this term, it's also called a creeping rootstock, and basically it's the extension of the underground plant stem, but that grows horizontally. In this way, it allows the plant to propagate itself, kind of like bamboo and poplars and such.
So basically the rhizoma is, for me, kind of like ultimate ideal model that we could use, like being taught by nature and producing that into, like, reproducing nature's models. Rhizoma does create little babies, no, but it's not a tree. It doesn't have a central system. It's kind of an interconnected web of itself reproducing it. So I see that the seven sisters, And the projects that we associate to each other now are becoming this web. And through the collaboration of all of them, we start to integrate hemp into the local communities. So that it's not there's hemp and then there's other things. It's hemp is part of a crop, of a food crop. You can have all kinds of plants growing together. Why shouldn't you have some 50 hemp plants there? Because hemp does actually grow well in very close to each other. So you wouldn't but put just one or two plants there.
Right. Have you discovered any good companion plants to grow alongside hemp that helps it?
We are in the discovery right now because I am actually not the professional in agricultural part. I'm working with some people together that are the geeks of how to put things into order and how to put the plants together, because it's I don't know how you say in Portuguese, we say solanaceae, so that's the family. It's a family of the aubergine, of the tomato.
Oh, right. The nightshade family.
Yes, exactly. Nightshade, yeah. Mm-hmm. So basically, you can consider it as one of those plants. Because as the hemp has been always stigmatized, it always like, oh, that's hemp. Okay. But it is a nightshade plant. So you don't want to put so much water directly on it. No. So you have to have an irrigation that's most likely from the bottom. No.
Right.
In our climate zone, it's between March and...
Oh, and your planting window or your growing season?
Yeah, it's between March and July.
Okay.
But we have already, like, the first year we planted, we harvested in August, and it was still okay. But as the heat is very strong in Portugal, we had to harvest them earlier. And, I mean, the sun is guiding us, no? So on the 21st of March, the equinox, we start to plant. And then, basically, on the summer solstice, you basically want to collect them because...
Okay.
Then sun hours go lesser, and just like all the other plants have their cycle, the hemp works a lot with the sunlight.
And what does that look like when you guys go out and harvest the hemp plants? What do you guys harvest it with? What are the tools involved?
It's beautiful. So, what we did is we gathered lots of people together. I have some photos in our Instagram about that. It was a beautiful gathering. So we put all the friends together and all the kids, and we just started cutting off buds that have the most medical properties, no? And we separated the ones that are already very ripe, which have ripe seeds, and then we separated the ones that are still more green for the therapeutical approach. And then we had the stalks and cut off the stalks on the bottom, already without the main flowers and the main leaves, because the hemp grows very, very high and without many side branches. So we had lots of people together, and it was beautiful. And we just gathered all the stalks, we shared food, and it was kind of a celebration. So it was a beautiful kind of keeping the traditions, because in Portugal, we are very traditional still. And you go in the countryside and there's a harvest time. There's a sowing time. It is in the people. Like, there's different meals for different seasonal food. It is still very much in our culture, actually. Everybody in Lisbon has some kind of family member that has a little land somewhere up there in the north or in the south. There's a lot of abundance here, which the people sometimes they don't see. Many people here think that they're very poor because their mindset is shifted more a lot to values.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Which is very sad, because we have we have the best wine, we have the best olive oil, we have amazing figs. We can do it. Like, we can intervene in this situation that we are now. It's just we have to start small and everybody make their little difference. So I'm very inspired by the regenerative culture movement from Findhorn. I've been recently researching a lot about their approaches and about their sharing and community technologies, about how to bring small changes into a global network and become and have more impact and inspire more people to get moving. And it's beautiful. It's really wonderful.
So it appears to me too that there's a lot of advantages when you cultivate hemp this way by traditional means and within community versus a one person operate or like a small team operation utilizing heavy machinery and monoculture. Would you agree with this? How would you highlight the key advantages from traditional hemp cultivation versus monocultural machinery cultivation?
Well, I tried it almost both ways. No, I tried it on the big scale from the beginning, and we didn't manage because we didn't have the tools. No, but what happens is that it needs a chain of industry. So if this exists in the country already, I think it can be consciously used, meaning you make crop rotation and you let other species exist. And then I think it's okay to even make a hemp monoculture, I would say. Now there's people that are, you know, very, very concerned about the use of machinery in agriculture. But mm-hmm. I would say that hemp, as it is being cut on the top, on the bottom, it has still the roots in there that are extremely deep. So during the 3 months process of cultivation, the roots do their act there. They do infiltrate water in the soils, and then they stay there, so they're not being taken off. So even if you use heavy machinery, for example, what you can do, you could cut down the plants and just reincorporate them into the soil. That's the way you can bring the plants or all the work and the organic material back into the soil. No, so if you do that in monoculture agriculture, I think it's still one solution of being able to make a big plantation and being able to serve to an industry that produces hemp paper, because you need a lot of plants for having a lot of pulp. And you save also petrol. I would say petrol and all kinds of logistics to having a widespread hemp production all over the place, you know. So mm-hmm. there are benefits to having a bigger monocultures, but not bigger monocultures, I say like a bigger area with machinery. But as we don't have this industry here, and as actually, as I said in the beginning, the act of using the machinery takes us away from touching the plant and working the plant and appreciating it. And I think it loses a lot of the connection that right. the human beings actually have with earth and with the plants and the whole.
Totally.
So I think it's, in a way, it is this middle way that we have to take, no? Because there are lots of human beings on this earth, and there is a lot of demand for many products, and there is a lot of need of feeding, no? But on the other hand, if we in the small, like I, you know, I have so many seeds in my place and I still didn't eat them, and they're still from 2 years ago. I can feed the whole village with the seeds.
No way. You
know? Yeah. But they have to be worked manually, because there are many of them that are not ripe, and that are some of them that have still stalks and some little parts in it. So you wouldn't be able to sell them, but I would be able to eat them, and I do eat them. I germinate them sometimes because they have lots of property being germinated. So there's that part. Always there's the centralized, and then there's the decentralized version. No, and I think that this industry, the industrial approach, is always the decentralized one, and the small scale one is the decentralized, which brings us closer to the plants, to the earth, and to the people that are actually connected to this project, to this plant. So in the end, that's what I see. What an advantage! It's an integral advantage that you have. No, so if you do a monoculture, or if you're gonna do a bigger plantation, it's very hard to actually take care of the whole crop. You know, you're gonna lose part of the crop, but at the same time, you're just going to transform it into packaged products, and then at some kind they lose their validity and they mm-hmm. are in the stores, you know. So I think that's this important point of like where we are now in humankind, like overconsumption, overproduction. So I think it's exactly that question, you know, what is better? Like in every other thing, it's better to grow our own plant. Mm-hmm. So my final goal after the rhizome theory is that we in end all the people have their own little plantation in their garden. No?
Yeah.
But it's possible, for example, also to plant hemp in cities. But first we have to do the work and show what hemp does. Because hemp does clean out heavy metals. It does clean out radioactivity. It was used in Chernobyl. It's incredible. It transforms it. No? So what happens? You might not want to eat the first year crop, but you can reincorporate it in the soil. You can plant it again. And the alchemy that's happening in that whole process is transforming non the toxic substances into other chemical compounds. So this magic that nature really does by itself, like, why should we intervene? No, there's probably going to be some species or bacteria or little ecosystems that might be able to even transform plastic at some point. No, and there is probably already, I'm not well informed about it, but I think nature has that power of healing itself, no? So we have to just give it space and time for it. So
man, I'm listening to this, and man, I just want to get going right away. I just want to plant all the hemp in the world that I can. That's just my like impulse, and I'm sure of a lot of other people's is impulse. So what would you tell them? How could one, get started and get going on this journey?
I rather would incentivize people now to make small scale productions and create a good connection, interconnection between, because I mean, I don't want, like, I want to make all everything out of hemp. Yeah. I want to make soap. I want to make fabric. I want to make my own food. I want to have medicine. I want to have everything out of it. But at the same time, I don't mind if my neighbor or my colleague or the village next door makes the soap products and I'm going to make the others. If we're going to deliver our raw products to each other, there's a chain of use, no? Just like they used to do it before.
Mm-hmm. How'd you guys learn these traditional methods when you guys started out? What has been your reference?
Okay, that's a really wonderful question, because first, it's something very, very, very natural. I think even if you give something to a child, they start like they just start spinning it in their hand. Now, if you give a fiber or something. So I think human beings, they have that intrinsically in them to transform this kind of things, because we are made on that earth doing that. That's why we have 5 fingers, 10 fingers and a brain. No. So I feel it's like almost inherited in my body, like as a female knowledge to transform things into fiber. I just flowed out of my hands and I never made a course. So at the other hand, it was taught to me by other people that are in the local community, you know? So on that hemp fiber lab, what happened, I just had that idea and I was clear that this was having to happen. So I just invited a lot of people and many of them had different knowledges. So one of them was a professional, she's very professional in textile and in hand spinning. She brought the knowledge from the linen plant. So in Portugal, we don't grow so much hemp right now, but there's a big production of linen, and it's still not industrial anymore, but there's still more linen than hemp. And linen has basically the same process of transformation as hemp. So there's some steps that are different and some things that you have to leave that you don't need to do, because hemp is actually much easier to transform. The linen has incredible, has all the whole process. So basically you put it into water, no? And then you dry it and then you beat it so that the inner parts of the sieve comes out, and then you brush it on big metal fingers, basically. Mm-hmm. So it's a whole bunch of plants that you throw onto needles, basically, or like huge metal needles, and you just push it through. You just pull it through, and so you're brushing like a bunch of hair, basically, and then you refine it each step more. And there's actually material of that, like visual material about it in the internet, about hemp, but a lot about linen in Portugal. So there's even some anthropological research that has been done that you can check online. It's beautiful.
And listeners who haven't heard of shivs, the shivs are the little pieces inside that breaks off from like the stalk structure, correct?
Yes. So it's basically the inside part, which is white. And that's the raw material that you can use for building. If you have ever heard of hemp-free, mm-hmm. is a version of concrete based on hemp. So you use these shivs all in little pieces, ground up in pieces, and mix it with, you mix it with kal, which is calcium dioxide, I think.
Lime. Yeah. Lime. I've done it before myself. It's a really fun way of building, and really easy too. So we just mix like a hydrated lime with the shivs and water and an aggregate base, and man, then there you have it. You have the raw material to make a house.
Exactly. And I mean, you do need actually a good hectare or some more hectares for that. Mm-hmm. But it's not something that that you can't do. I mean, building a house, you don't do it by yourself either, no? So
No way. So unless you want to do it, wait for
that's
years.
That's the whole thing about a community, you know?
Right, of course. What end products have you guys successfully created so far?
Okay, so I do have to say that we started out in the beginning with our own CBD oils, because that was the need of, like, that was the most valorized part of the plant, you know? And naturally, we kind of had to sustain the project, so we went through that. Also, there's not so much CBD oils in the market in Portugal. So I started out to make some, we started out to make some homemade oils, and they have been very successfully been introduced into the market, and they have been super, super, super well received. I have had incredible results of, well, we know all the benefits of CBD. I think people are extremely informed about it right now, but there's cases, and that's the beauty of it, that I have very personal cases of success in small things. So I have not had any epilepsy patients and nothing like that, but I've had been working a lot with people with anxiety, lots of people with cancer, for example, pancreatic cancer. I've had worked with people that have HPV.
So you would say that the local market there has been, you would say the demand is very high there than in the local market.
I think I think I have educated the whole community right now.
Wow.
And it does make a big change, no? I mean, like, people could buy it somewhere else, but I see that just having been there and having implemented plant in the local community made that the people started really using it. I mean, they could have gone to another doctor, or they could have used other plants, because we do have actually quite an alternative community that use natural remedies and plant therapies. So there is a big openness for this in this area where we live. But they started using this plant. So our community is already kind of turning into a little hemp community.
Like a hemp hub. Sounds wonderful.
But it's not, like, it's on a very small scale. But I feel that this can have an impact, because, like, from my rhizome theory, I can say that it's going to reproduce itself in another little community when there's a beautiful project in Poland called Obelisk Farm, which you know about them?
No, I don't.
This is a Polish family, and they're winning prizes all over Europe because they're having a wonderful model, just like me, but on a different, like, they have a lot of experience and they do it for years, for many more years than I do. And in Poland and also the Slavic areas in Europe, they have been actually very big in hemp much earlier than the western end where we are. So it's a family farm, and they are super famous now, and it's beautiful how they inspire me and other projects. So I just totally believe in that.
So maybe you know, after listening to this, some people might be very excited to, you know, dive right in and get going on their own project perhaps, but maybe not sure where to look for the information. Do you think there's quite a bit of an abundance or readily available information as it regards to hemp? What is your thoughts?
If you really want to know something about hemp, there's so much information out there. Like, I feel that the motivation is what really made me continue to work with the plant. It's not like, okay, now you have to do this and you have to do that and you have to plant this and that. I mean, there's some practical issues, but the practical issues are really small compared to what it really means to work and to use its whole potential. Because it's easy to just set up a little laboratory, put your 10 cannabis plants in there, and, you know, because there's this approach also. And in Portugal, there's actually there's a lot of companies now, a Canadian company that started 2 years ago, that make medical cannabis now. And I see that, I don't want to say that I'm opposing to them, because there is a big demand for that medicine right now. And yeah, Portugal has the soil and the sun for it, but they're not even using the soil. They're planting plants in pots, putting plastic on the floor and putting the tops on top of the plastic, and in acres and acres. This is not sustainable, and it's not a way to produce a medicine. And you can say hemp is so natural, but this is not natural.
So what's on the horizon for you guys for this year, 2020?
Communication is one of the biggest things I'm going to work on this year, and this is going to happen through art and projects and little events. And one result I want to see at the end of the year, and that actually starts with the project next week, is make a big carpet and weave into the carpet this hemp seeds. So it's possible. There's weaving techniques where you just like open the fabric a little bit and you close it again, and you can put seeds. So I'm dreaming of making that huge fabric with lots of hemp seeds in there. And then we're just going to put down the carpet on the ground and let it grow. It's kind of a symbolic act of covering the earth. I sometimes feel like that this earth has a pain, or there's some kind of, like, how would it feel all your skin being burnt? You know, desert is like not natural desert. How does it feel to have that, like, have it all dry, you know, and fires running all over us, you know? This is terrible. We are a green planet. We are a planet of water. For me, it makes sense to kind of like, you know, soothe the earth with like a band-aid. So I feel like a little band-aid for the soil, for the earth. And it does also cover the soil from sun. It does cover the soil from other species going through it. I mean, there are going to be species that are going to get through like the little textile holes, but others, they just not going to develop there. So I can kind of create like a little piece of land with that little carpet. So that's what I'm dreaming of.
Nice. Sounds wonderful. How would listeners be able to see what you're up to and get in touch with you?
Okay. So right now our Instagram page is quite active with sharing information. So I would recommend the Instagram page. So it's Set Irmas with number 7, and it's IRMAS, Set Irmas, 7 Sisters.
And I will also include those links onto the description. Yes, sure, as well. Yes.
But I have to say that I'm a little bit shocked about this. I was just blocked on Instagram this week when I started to write some empowering message about hemp and how it can substitute all kinds of things, and how it's empowering to women, how it's empowering to our humankind. And they deleted the comment, or they deleted the subtitles. And really? I'm not to do any likes, neither comments right now. So I can only send private messages, and I'm sending out stories. So you have to keep update every day and check out what's going on. Because I don't know if they're going to continue to keep me blocked or not, but for now I don't want to change profile. So that's, I mean, I'm just sharing that because it's, I think it's very important to realize that how controlled we are when we try to empower each other.
Thanks a lot. This is awesome. I always love hearing about your work and what you're doing.
Wonderful. I would really like to, like, if I'm going to come up with some incredible information that is happening, I'm going to let you know also. Because
Please do.
It's a very moved energy right now, and it's really a lot of things happening in the last 3 weeks, which are actually more clear. But I cannot share everything because it's a little bit delicate with the law. Thank you very much. Okay.
Yes. Thank you. Have a good night.
You too.
All right. Bye bye. There you have it, folks. That's Lily for you. And check her out on her links provided below and see what she's up to and show her some love, guys. And that's all we got today. So until next time, much love.